Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
Hello and welcome to the Magic Week in Review, bringing you news, rumor, and culture reports from the front lines of the magic industry. I'm Justin Robert Young, and in this May 23rd, 2010 edition of the podcast, you will hear about Martin Gardner, Darren Brown, David Letterman's close-up Magic Week, and stay tuned to the end of the podcast. You hear how much money Steve Weirich spent on his ill-fated Vegas show. Here to help me with all this is a titan. I mean, as somebody who has gotten into the magic industry coverage world, he is certainly a man who needs no introduction. He is the publisher of Magic Magazine. He's shaking his head in modesty, but he shouldn't. He is Stan Allen. Welcome for the first time to the Magic Week in Review.
Well, thank you, Justin. Now, I'm just feeling old all of a sudden. Thank you.
Oh, come on. No, you should. You are obviously Magic Magazine is a standard by which I know that we try to measure ourselves up to. So it is an honor to have you on the podcast talking about the news.
My pleasure.
Before we get started, I do want to let everybody know that Trick Shot Magic not only sponsors this here podcast, but also is the best place for you to get all the new releases, as well as the classics that you simply need to continue to be the best at your game. Folks, Sam Blankenship is a friend of this show, a friend of this site, and a friend to you. You head on over and pick up, the best prices, the best selection. It's Trick Shot Magic. The brick-and-mortar experience brought to the internet one click at a time. Well, you know, not to start off with a bummer, but, we'll go with the big news that broke over the weekend. Martin Gardner is no longer with us. He died at the age of 95. Stan, what does Martin mean to the world of magic?
Well, Martin certainly was an icon. His work dates, all the way back, and everybody respects Martin. There's no question. One of the brightest people we've ever had play in this field. And I think his legacy, the impromptu encyclopedia. Wow.
Yeah. And this is, I'm sure, something that you heard, but it seemed to me the most fascinating thing with Martin over the last couple of years was that, I mean, magicians would kind of make, Mecca to him. They're visiting Martin Gardner for a bunch of people, and I would be curious to hear if it was the same with you. It just became kind of a regular thing that people wanted to go visit him and wanted to go kind of have an audience at his feet. I mean, is that something that you heard as well?
Well, there's no question about it. I mean, we have an interview that Joshua Jay did with him, a year or two ago. And Josh just walked away very much Mecca bound, Mecca influenced, if you will. And, Josh is a bright guy. He hangs out with some of the best in the field, and he went away in total awe. We ran an interview before by Richard Hatch and Charlie Randall and the same kind of thing. And I think part of that is here is a guy that is about as humble as you could possibly be. And yet at the same time, he will pose questions to you that just cut right to it.
Yeah.
So he's a super, he was just an extremely nice man, I think is, maybe that's corny, but I always found him to be that way. I never met him face to face. He wrote for our years, and we had a number of phone conversations, but I never met him. We tried to get him to come to Magic Live.
And, oh, really?
Oh, did we? We tried a couple things. We tried to, first of all, he did Martin Gardner's Corner in Magic Magazine for, 3 years, 4 years or something like that. And these were just little, sort of impromptu tidbit things. We wanted something where the reader could go down to the factory where he or she worked and could do the trick right away. And Martin was terrific. We tried to get him to come to live, and he just was like, oh, Stan, I'd have to travel by train. I didn't want to leave his wife.
Yeah.
And James Randi and I, we even discussed the idea of doing a electronic well, what would you call it? A remote with Martin sitting at his home. But in 2004, to do that would have cost about $15,000 to $20,000. Now, today, we could have done it easily.
All right. You know, and that's, I think you summed it up really, really well in just saying that he was a nice guy. And you know, there's a phrase that I think kind of gets misinterpreted as something less than what it is when people say that someone is just a decent human being. And I think that's, when you think of the kind of personality and temperament and how many people have come away talking with Martin Gardner, and like you, I never met him. I never spoke to him, actually, but I've known so many people who were so affected by him, including, you know, when I was working with Randy, that, you know, there's it just seems like that word would be appropriate. He's just the kind of person that you come away feeling good after you've met him.
Right. And even though he was held in such high esteem, I don't think he ever took himself that seriously. And I don't know, did he ever attend the gatherings for Gardner? I don't believe he ever did.
I don't think so. No. No.
No. I mean, here's a whole conclave going on in your honor.
A festival for him.
He's probably embarrassed about it.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, I'll tell you what, he will very, very, very much be missed. And you can read all about him, not only on iTrix, but certainly everywhere else. We'll try to link to everything that comes up, because he's certainly a man. And especially for any younger folks who might not know so much about Martin, he's certainly worth reading about. He is a unique personality that will not soon be replicated. Darren Brown mentioned in an interview this weekend that he feels like he comes off as creepy when meeting some of the celebrities and even some of his own heroes and icons that he works with on his shows. He kind of wishes that he would maybe be able to relate to them more as a person and not kind of in character. Stan, do you think that, let's just even hone in on mentalists. Do you think that they come off as creepy to people?
Oh. Oh, you shouldn't feed me those kinds of things.
Yes, I should. Come on. Are they creepy?
Nothing good
mentalists?
Is going to come of that. Well, yes, of course they do, because, I mean, partially because of what they're doing and what they're professing that they're doing.
Yeah.
Magician walks on stage and they say, hey, a magician's here to do some stuff for us. The whole audience understands he's going to do some tricks. He's going to fool us. It's sort of you against them, you know, and hopefully that your personality is less caustic than that. But a mentalist is in that gray area, and they deliberately want to be in that gray area. So, yeah, that's going to come off as a little creepy. You know, put them in with televangelists, maybe.
Yeah.
I always said, okay, I'm going to say this.
Please do.
But I always felt.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. I've got that all messed up. I see, it is. We just had a Skype moment, by the way, because I've always said escape artists are another one. Because
yes.
They can't just let it be a trick. Thus, they have to, you know, be boisterous and braggish. And I always said escape artists are magic's professional wrestlers. And mentalists are, I think, just by the nature of what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, you know, there is, I think mentalism is maybe the most acute with it, because you are relying totally on the effect as opposed to spectacle, where maybe a stage illusionist, or even to a certain extent, a close-up magician kind of has more of a visual sort of stimulation. The mentalist, I believe, is all about that connection, all about kind of inside your mind by way of their powers. But I think that there is certainly an undercurrent in almost all of magic where you are doing the unexplained. You have a mastery of the unexplained, and if you play that hand too hard, it is just kind of, you know, weird and creepy and otherworldly, and there is an inhuman kind of sense to it. And I think when we look at bad magic or bad presentation, it might be a lot of the times, you know, people kind of making that too much of a centerpiece of their act. I mean, do you think that might be where it comes from?
I think you're right. You know, audiences, it's a funny thing. We want to see Jack Nicholson be weird.
Yes.
But if you met him at a party, do you want him to be weird?
You know, kind of. I mean,
to a certain degree, but yeah. if you're You know, am I going to invite him to dinner? I'm not real sure about that. You want a little bit of it, but in other words, Robin Williams, you want him to be funny when you meet him at a party, but wouldn't you like to have a real conversation with him? Aren't talk shows, I mean, come on, we know talk shows are not total reality, but you listen to a guest on stage that just cuts to the chase. Kate Beckinsale, I think it was, they ask her on a talk show about going home, and she's got, you know, does she go home? She's a star and whatever. Where's she from? Wales, I think.
I think
somewhere there. Yeah, and she says, star? Oh, hell, I've got seven brothers. I'm defending myself from getting a wedgie the whole time I'm there.
Yeah.
You know, and that, there's a reality to that, that you just go, oh, wow. And if you have to play this know-all, omnipotent, geez, how do you ever come off from that? How do you step down from that?
I don't know. I do not know. But I think it is something that people got to think about, especially, you know, just in terms of, I mean, how many times have you heard somebody that you know or something at your meeting and you mentioned that you cover magic and that's, you know, kind of the stereotypical from a layman, the bad thing about a magician is, you know, they're just way creepy, right?
Well, they're way creepy and they're on the whole time. Magic is one of the few arts that, gosh, you know, you'll give it away free at a party.
Absolutely. And you are expected to. You are asked and requested.
Yeah, I'm not sure which came first, the chicken or the egg in that thing. Maybe if we stopped doing it. I remember when I used to work cruise ships a zillion years ago. Yeah, you're mingling with your passengers, with the customers, with the audience. And they would say, hey, can you do a trick for us? And you say, hey, what are you doing Wednesday night? 11 o'clock, the Pacific Lounge. I'll do one just for you. I never did a trick off stage the whole time I was there.
Huh. Yeah, and there is certainly something to that. And the more, you know, I think I was on, we have the, you know, the 24-hour kind of chat room on iTrix, itrix.com/live. So I was in there on Saturday, I believe. And I forgot how it came up, but somebody mentioned something about patter or connecting to audiences. And I'm not a magician. I've never kind of profess to be one, but in my estimation, my guess, if I were a young magician, the first thing that I would do is talk to people, just get used to connecting on a human level. And this is even something we'll kind of seamlessly segue into our next topic here, which is the close-up magic week on Letterman, is that you even see at the highest level, guys who are legends in close-up magic were flustered by conversation by David Letterman. That, you know, when it got off the performance from, like, all right, now I do A, I do B, I do C, I do D, I know how to get from, you know, from one point to another with the transitions that I've set up in my pattern. As soon as Dave came in with a joke or a question or a comment, it wasn't like, hey, this is part of the conversation. This is like, okay, my act has stopped. Now I will reset and I will begin going again. And I think that the more you can make it a conversation, the more you can make it, hey, I'm just a guy who is talking to you and happens to have these kind of skills or does this kind of performance, the better off you're going to be. But do you see where I'm coming from with the close-up magic thing?
Well, sure, absolutely. I mean, first of all, David Letterman, I'm not sure I'd want to get into a verbal thing with David Letterman.
Oh, no.
Let's send Penn Jillette in. You know, that's our best guy on that one, I
Absolutely.
Think. Get him off
of it.
But yes, you're right. And, you know, people like Harry Anderson used to be on Carson show and they'd sit there and have actual conversation.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be his act. Now, you knew he was doing stuff that he knew where he was going. But the whole game there is to make it sound impromptu, if you will, extemporaneous. And yeah, we as magicians need to listen to our audiences a hell of a lot more and converse with them, because that's what makes live theater, is that, oh, I was there the night. I remember this. I walked into a grocery store in my neighborhood when I was doing a lot of cruise ships, and a lady says, yeah, I was on a cruise with you about 6 months ago. I was there the night you accidentally burned up the guy's $100 bill.
Ah, there we go.
And you just want to say, oh, I love you.
Yes.
But the whole point was, is that, we're supposed to be actors. playing different characters and things, we're supposed to be able to interface with that audience as things happen, and they go away with something special. That's why I thought John Carney came off really well with the, you know, the business about if you want to examine anything, forget it. It's out of the question. I mean, it was just real. He wasn't putting on a big air.
Yeah. Well, all right. So let's play judge. Do you think John Carney won the week, so to speak?
Oh, fine. So pissing off a bunch of mentalists wasn't good enough for you.
No, it wasn't.
You want me to take on the five guys that were on Letterman? I think I would give John Carney the nod in it just because I thought he came off as a regular guy, a more person that you would. Fitzky, I think, said if they want to invite you back without even doing your act, they just want you to come back and have dinner with them or lunch with them or whatever, then you've won. And I thought John pulled that off as good as anybody could in that scenario. And that is a damn tough scenario.
Oh, I mean, my God.
Yeah. Give us a table, please. Give us a, you know, you're twisted to the side. You're awkward. You talk about, you know, power positions. Yeah, you're in the, you know, the opposite of that.
Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah. And I think what's interesting with Close Up Magic Week is that Letterman is famously not been either friendly with magicians in recent years. You know, he, I guess it was last year he did the Illusion Week, and this year he does Close Up Magic Week. But it seems like he's warming up to the idea of magic on the show. And I mean, the other thing that's kind of been the book on Letterman has been he doesn't want to participate, and this was a whole week of him participating. So
I think it was a whole week. Yeah, it is a week of him doing it. And hey, you know what? He's not alone in the world of not having a magic trick done for you.
True.
I mean, there's a lot of people that run away screaming from that. And again, I think we've earned that. We've worked really hard at pissing people off over generations and generations and generations.
I agree.
And, I don't know who the first person was that ever printed on their business card, no shitty card tricks. Boy, they're just sort of summing it up there, aren't they? And so, I can understand that. But, you know, Magic, Craig Ferguson shows, done a couple of them. And
you can kind of point to that as why Letterman's done it. Yeah, I mean,
well, I hope so. Yeah, I mean, what, television copy something? No, that's never happened.
It is at least in the same production company.
Yes, it is. And the thing is that even Ferguson, though, remember, he got into it because he's taking his son to see Lance Burton or something.
Yeah.
He didn't want to go. And afterwards he went, wow, this was great. Well, again, as a performing magician, we want to follow somebody who was good. We want to follow. We had a magician last year, and I'm thinking in my head, oh, please be good.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Because you can't win against somebody who hates magic because they saw a bad magician. That's a tough sell for anybody, whether you're a corporate magician or whether you're a birthday party. It doesn't matter. You know, so yeah. And I wouldn't dismiss the impact of, say, a Neil Patrick Harris in this.
Absolutely.
Where magic is a lot hipper and cooler than it was two or three years ago before the Neo Blitz hit the world. And also movies like The Illusionist and The Prestige, where big name actors are playing magicians and they're not playing Ferdinand the Great. They're, you know, some geeky guy in a bad tuxedo and a bad hairstyle. That was always my thing. I always would get upset when they would do like a practical joke show or something and they would have some badly dressed magician in a bad haircut, and they didn't need to. They could have had, you know, Lance Burton dressed really well and the gag would still work just as well. But there's the perception of magic.
Yeah, yeah. And like you said, I don't think that this was necessarily something totally foisted upon the magic industry by outside forces.
Oh, no, 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 no. We have earned our stripes. Thank you.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about, real quick, before we get into the new issue of Magic Magazine. You mentioned Lance Burton. Are you hearing anything about the future of Lance in Las Vegas as we draw closer and closer to the end of his Monte Carlo show?
Well, on the record, Lance isn't saying too much.
Yeah.
Off record, I know that they are looking at other properties. and that the people around Lance are very optimistic about that. Lance, of course, has been set for a long time, but not that he wants to retire 100%. But he also feels a tremendous loyalty to his cast and crew there.
Absolutely.
That is very much a family. That's why he walked away from Monte Carlo, because they wanted to cut family and crew. And so, and at the same time, though, they're looking for where they're going to store the show and how they're going to do the loadout.
Yeah.
So both sides are being worked on at the moment.
If you were going to put on your predictor hat, do you think that we see Lance Burton back on the strip by the end of the year? And if so, where?
Okay, I don't think you see him by the end of the year.
Yeah.
I think just a little bit of time has to go by. And this is just totally, you know, crystal ball gazing. If I owned a hotel, God forbid, would I want to move Lance from somewhere else to my hotel?
Yeah.
No, I would like to have a break in there. I would like to have a sort of back by popular demand, if you will. If you're moving down the road, in other words, Monte Carlo is a pretty nice hotel. And so if you're going to move up, you're going to look at Bellagio or Wynn or some of these properties that are just more elite.
Yeah.
It's also going to have to be the right place as far as they need the nighttime late show. I think Lance is not going to go back into a two show a night deal.
Do you think, I mean, what do you think that he needs room-wise? Does it need to be a smaller room, or does it need to be the right kind of room for Lance Burton? Or,
well, it's going to have to be the right kind of room.
Yeah.
No question. And, you know, we're searching for the right theater to put a Magic Live show in. It's one of the drawbacks in this town. You have a 4,000-seat theater over at the Planet Hollywood. But if you try to find a 1,500-seat theater in this town right now that doesn't have a production show in it or doesn't have a star in it, it's hard to do.
Yeah.
That was one of the big draws to the Orleans, is they have a 900-seat, 800-seat theater there. Lance has a 1,200-ish seat theater where he's at. I don't think we'll see Lance in that size show room, I think. But again, you can't do it too small. You know, Vegas shows are notoriously small showrooms.
Yeah.
At Harrah's, Mac, I think that room is 550 seats. That's where Spellbound played. And it's not an enormous room. The Hilton, there's only a couple enormous rooms out there. So, yeah, Lance will need to find a room that's large enough where he can only do one show, has to do one show a night. That's not going to be easy.
No. He certainly has his work cut out for him. But, I mean, like you said, the way that, like, things work in Vegas, it would make more sense if, you know, he stores the show. All of a sudden, you know, something falls out of favor. Something doesn't go, you know, according to plan. And all of a sudden, a proven track record Vegas icon is just kind of waiting to be taken advantage of by some property.
Right. And there's a lot of rumors going on right now. It's sort of musical showrooms right at the moment. There's rumors Rick Thomas is moving.
Yes.
You have those?
Propagated by us. Yes.
Okay, good. Well, then you're the one starting these rumors. Good.
We have Rick Thomas going into the former Steve Weirich room that is now owned by David Sachs. That was
right. Now who do you have going to Sahara?
Right now we don't have any intel on that. Do you have somebody going to Sahara?
I only have rumors about fourth, fifth, sixth hand.
Okay.
So take these for whatever they're worth. But I think you might see Dirk Arthur down there.
Jeez, yeah, wow. Then it would just be musical showrooms, wouldn't it?
It is becoming musical showrooms, and that leaves Steve Weirich sort of odd man out, doesn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And we will get right into Steve Weirich, but I do want to talk about the new issue of Magic Magazine. Who's on the cover this month?
Mark Kalin and Ginger.
And you were talking to me before we went on that this is a bit of a unique article, right?
It is. We've done a couple of these over the years. Probably the most famous one would have been Ed Alonso writing about his own experience on the Britney Spears tour. Mark Kalin, for some reason, when booked to do a circus in San Juan for 6 or 7 weeks, decided he would start journaling.
Okay.
And I don't know how well you know Mark, but Mark is a very funny guy. He's one of these guys that'll tell you the stupidest thing he did.
Yes.
And just So you can't ever get anything over on Mark because he'll be the one that'll tell you the stupidest one.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he's a very likable guy that way. And so he kept this journal and he said, hey, do you think this would be worth printing? And he sent me 1,200 words, 1,500 words. And I was laughing out loud at this thing. And I wrote him back and I said, yeah, finish it. And as it turned out, we had a slot open for cover and this worked in perfectly. And I think people are really going to enjoy this story. It really shows you what life is like out there.
Absolutely. Well, I'd say I encourage everybody to go out and pick up this issue of Magic Magazine. Anything else in there that you want to mention?
Sure, I'll be happy to. We have a short interview with Jonathan Pendragon, which I believe is his first interview since wrapping up his almost 1 year booking.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, if there would have been another word from him, we would have put it on the site. So
right. And Jonathan talks about how he's putting his life back together. I mean, at one point he talks about how we all think we live in these nice little boxes we've built, and then one day, you know, maybe one wall falls in and we can all deal with it. And he talks about all four walls coming crashing down at one time. And it happened.
Yeah, it might have been fifth dimension walls that might have.
Yeah, there might have been an extra one in there. If you're living in a box, I think the top and bottom crashed as well.
Absolutely.
And so it's fascinating to talk with them. He's going to be working the Magic Castle in July. He's going to be working up in Martinez at the California Dinner Theater. And I heard he's heading into Idaho for a magic. So he's back just working and as a solo magician. And I think it's great. And he tells us what kind of stuff he's doing.
That is great. I mean, it is a fantastic get. And it's the reason why Magic Magazine is what it is today. You know, I'll tell you, when are you just, we all just sit here, everybody who works with iTricks, we all just sit here and wait with bated breath for you to just come online and just destroy us. When is that going to happen? Just so I can stop worrying about it.
Oh, I'm just teasing you guys. I'm just letting you go out there for a while.
I know. We just sit here and we wonder. But, I mean, in all seriousness, do you guys think that you will ever do a big online online kind of thing?
No, we're dabbling with it right now. The short answer is yes, of course. You know, print media is changing. And it's changing drastically. And, you know, people can sit around and say, oh, I like the feel of a book in my hands. Yeah, so do I.
Yeah.
I like the feel of a magazine.
So, yeah, pay for it.
So do I. Yeah. But the fact is that as much as I liked my Beta machine, the first video machine I had, it wasn't that long before I had a VHS.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I think, I mean, you guys have... certainly have the content that I would kind of love to see kind of put online. I know a lot of people would. You know, hell, people read us. They'll certainly read you.
Well, you have just the fun part, though. You can throw rumors out there and 15 minutes later dispel them. You know, we have to sort of put I don't know.
You know, it's the difference between talking to your audience once a month and talking to your audience 8 times a day. You know,
right. And you can take that further, that even in a magazine, if we screw something up like that's ever happened.
Yes. Let's say theoretically.
More than 10 times a month. Yeah, that could have happened. It might have happened once.
Maybe.
But if we screw something up, okay, next month we go back and fix it.
Yes.
You know, now it doesn't mean it all goes away and it's all forgiven. But, you know, we do. We can reprint it. Where if you're writing a book on a particular subject and you're putting it up on the shelf – same kind of thing. So books have to be researched even harder. Magazines have to be a little bit less, but more than iTricks.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there is a gigantic freedom to be able to, let's say with that, you know, the Rick Thomas rumor, you know, that we can get from people that we think are credible enough. You know, the word that Rick Thomas is going into the Sax Theater, we can throw that up there. And then if all of a sudden, you know, that turns out, you know, that all the, you know, things have changed, the situation is not what it was, even if the intel was good at the time, it is not good now, we can go back and say, hey, listen, you know, this is not what it was once. And I think there is a difference in the relationship that people have with Magic Magazine than have with us, in that, people, I think even people who like the site and respect the site and want to know what's going on, know that if we put rumor in front of it, then, you know, it might not be true in 2 weeks. But then again, at the same time, it's kind of like the lotto ticket, you know, it might be true 3 weeks before it's confirmed, like it was, you know, with some of the Lance news.
Well, you know, I had a little newsletter before I had a magazine, and it went out once a month. And boy, we were the timely. We would have been the iTricks of our time, Inside Yes. Magic, from 85 to 91, I guess. And I remember when we broke that Doug Henning was retiring from Magic.
Yeah.
We took a beating in the Magic press.
Really?
Yes. And the whole time we stood adamantly behind it because our source was adamant. And Yes. we believed in our source. And, you know, a month or two later, the world, you know, it was the very first time I was at an Abbott's, and I, you know, in those days you would get into the phone booth and call in and beep in your messages.
Yeah.
And it was the first time that I'd ever gotten a phone call from Time Magazine asking, please return my call. We're desperate to find out if this is true. Can you support this?
See, now that's the thing. And at least Time Magazine did that, because that's the problem now is that, you know, for us. And I'll tell you what, it is only because we have a good relationship with some of the columnists in Vegas. And if it weren't for Norm Clark and Mike Weatherford, I don't think that a large audience would, like, know that we broke the Lance news. You know, because they were yeah. nice enough to say, hey, listen, iTricks had this a week ago.
Yeah, you were. There's no question. I was literally having a conversation with my wife and my daughter is linked into iTricks.
Yes.
And she's not a magician, has no interest in. I think she falls mostly on the side of David Letterman.
Okay.
Than regular Magic audience.
That's awesome.
Part of growing up around it and meeting way too many magicians.
Exactly.
But in the middle of the conversation, and this was a serious conversation we were having about something in child raising or whatever.
Yeah.
And her phone, little message, and she comes out, she said, Dad, did you know Lance Burton is leaving the Monte Carlo? What? What? So, yeah, if the world wants to know how Magic Magazine learns about these things,
month,
we learned about it from iTricks through my daughter.
Through Katie. That's awesome.
That's it, man.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, listen, it's you guys, and this is the reason why. You know, and people, and I was joking before, but, you know, having you guys come in and wipe us out, which if you want.
We're not joking about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you wanted to do that, you should have done that in the first 6 months. First 6 months, you could have killed us.
Okay.
Now, missed. I think we're going to be around for a little bit. But, I mean, when people ask, you know, if you guys coming in would kill the site, I think there's the beautiful thing about the internet is that it is niches upon niches. And you know, there's always going to be room for a lot of people to cover things a lot of different ways. And if there's anything that we've seen from the magic industry, is the problem is not will people read as much about the industry as they possibly can. Because if they're into magic and they're into practicing for as much as they are, and they're in for watching as much video about it as they do, they certainly are going to read, if not our site, then three sites. If not three sites, then four sites. If not four sites, then five sites. The question really is, how do we get people online? Although, then again, I guess that's the opposite problem for you guys with Magic Magazine, right?
Well, no, it's always the same. And, you know, the thing about it is what really drives – competition is good.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, you know, when Genie Magazine was going through very tough times, Bill was sick, and, you know, magazines weren't coming out very often. We were pretty much the only game in town on the independent side.
Yeah.
And, you know, Richard Kaufman steps in and he puts out a magazine, a good magazine, every single month, you know. Mm-hmm. And something like Doug Henning, we get the news 2 days before we're going to press that Doug Henning has passed away out of the blue.
Yeah.
Didn't expect that. And, you know, we made the decision to hold up the magazine for an extra day and redo the entire cover and throw in 10, 12 pages of Doug Henning timeline. Would we have done that if we were the only game in town? Maybe, maybe not. But that competition drives us to do that.
And God, yeah.
Yeah, it's great to, you know, it's great to read something on the internet from you guys or from somebody else and say, I had no idea about that. Dang, I wish we had had that. But that's good. That's what drives us all. Ow, so I think there's plenty of room.
I could not agree more. And then there is, I think, a misconception from people. I mean, I don't know. I've always kind of lived under the idea that, you know, like, talent doesn't fear talent. And if everybody is doing a product that they feel is worth something and that they know has an audience and they know that they get feedback from people, then you're not afraid of somebody else who is doing a similar thing, because ultimately it's your product that's going to stand for your own effort.
Yeah. We don't lose business to our competitors. I think we lose business, you know, on something stupid we do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, yeah. Absolutely. And if we win, we win because of something good we do. It's, I don't blame the world. The world doesn't, life doesn't happen to you.
No.
Go out there, make it happen.
Let me ask you this. I am curious about it. We talked a little bit about it before the show, but, you know, you have the Pendragon story, and obviously that was a huge thing. Not to say that the Mark and Ginger story is not fantastic, but I mean, did you think about putting it on the cover?
No, not at all. You know, contrary to what people will say about me, that we don't look for controversy. And we don't look for sensationalism. Now, will we capitalize off from it at times? Sure, of course we will. I mean, yeah. But in this case, I think there's a bigger issue here. And all we wanted to do, we weren't looking for a scoop. I was talking to Jonathan because we've known each other for 40 years. He used to come in my magic shop, you know. And in the process, I said, you know, is there something you feel you want to tell the magic community? He said, there really is. I'd love to be the person to tell it. So in that particular case, no, we wouldn't put it on cover. A, it wasn't a very big story. It's only a single page interview with him. And he's just stepping off here. He's just getting his feet wet again. So it just felt bad time to blow it up big. And keep in mind, people put way too much credit on the cover of Magic Magazine or the cover of Genie or the other magazines, too. So sometimes we'll deliberately take a story and play it down a little bit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it is something that people are going to want to know. And I'm glad that he's out there talking, because, you know, there's a lot of times, especially for a story like his, you know, if he doesn't talk, someone else will certainly talk for him.
Well, yeah, and he is going to, you know, you don't hide this. You don't say, oh yeah, this never happened. Let's pretend this didn't happen.
Yes.
And we've had conversations about how he will be, you know, he talks about being nervous going to the Magic Castle for the first time and performing. And that's good. That's that. Go back to that human stuff we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
That performers need to be human. And if the, you know, I remember, and I talked to comics about this, comedy magicians. If I used to do a line in my act that was over the edge,
yeah,
it's critical to acknowledge to the audience that you understand you went over the edge.
Yes.
Because if you don't, now it's that creepy character that you talked about before, because we're not quite sure. Does he not get it that he said something that was inappropriate versus looking at the audience and saying, do you think I went too far with that? Or I think Mark Summers used to use the line, he said, okay, give me credit. I saw a cheap shot and I took it. Telling the audience, I just took a cheap shot, and it's a laugh again, but it does tell them, it's okay, I get it. I'm not some creep ball that you don't want to introduce your family to.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's get into the big story of the week, at least in terms of an industry and financial perspective. Steve Weirich's bankruptcy filing went public, thanks to Mike Weatherford of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. And boy, oh boy, is there a big number in what he spent on his show at the Desert Passage Mall next to the Planet Hollywood. $54 million when it was all said and done. He had around $50 listed in his bank account. But geez, Stan, you know, where does $54 million rank in terms of shows? I mean, like, is this I don't know. I mean, from your perspective, I mean, this is a crazy number, right? This is not what every failed Magic show ends up costing.
Yeah, it takes us at Magic Magazine at least 6 months to make that kind of money. I mean, we don't have that iTricks budget like you
do. Oh, God, no.
It takes us a while to get that kind of bucks.
Certainly so.
Well, first of all, if you go back to Siegfried and Roy's show at the Mirage, I think it was either $55 or $57 million is what that show cost to put in.
Yes, of course. So their show had a critical difference in that it made money, right?
Okay, if you're going to be nitpicky about this, obviously you're not a good investor, Steve, I think, on this one.
Oh, okay.
No, but I'm just saying look at the scope of the show. Okay, fine, it was 20 years ago. All right, fine. I can't believe, and I don't think anybody believes for a minute, that $54 million went under that stage. You know, I mean, just some simple math here.
For Wyrick.
The show played, for Wyrick. Yeah. I can't imagine it costing that much. I mean, look at what musicals cost. How many movies could you produce? It's an enormous number here. And I think everybody in Las Vegas is just shaking their head saying, how did it get out of hand? How did it get that far out of hand? Wherever the money was going, how did it get that far out of hand? Because you're looking at, if the show played, it played a little less than 3 years, I think, there.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So in 3 years, if you play six nights a week, you know, you're looking at 900 days plus change total in the 3 years.
Yeah.
All right. That means, with a simple calculator here, they lost $58,000 a day that the show played. Now, I'm sorry.
That is a yipes stripes moment.
Yeah, I never made it to calculus.
Yeah.
But I was just before that new math came in.
Exactly.
But yeah, these numbers just don't make sense to me. And but you know, we've all questioned Steve's show before. The rumors from the past was that Mom had a lot of money. The family had $1 zillion or something.
Yeah.
Steve, in an interview with me, said no, that wasn't the case. That this is not all Mom's money. In this, I have investors. And he works really hard at that. He also told me he made good money down at the Sahara, that the Sahara was a really good deal for him. So, but there's always been that question of how does Steve Wyrick, you know, maintain a show here for 8 years, 9, 10 years, I guess by now.
Yeah.
The $54 million number, it's mind boggling. And I don't know where that's coming from.
Yeah, well, you know, he lists a couple of investors who I don't have in front of me right now, but yeah, it is.
Yeah.
He's also according to the filing, living off gifts from his mother. So I don't think that this will dispel any future rumors of his mother.
Well, no,
helping him.
I think you're probably right. Grain of salt should be taken with everything. Isn't there a listing too on what his motorcycle cost?
Yeah. They were repossessed. His motorcycle, as well as I guess some vintage Magic posters.
Well,
I don't have that number in front of me.
Yeah, there was a very high number on that motorcycle, and that sort of gives you probably a guess of what a lifestyle like Steve Wyrick's was.
Yeah.
You know, whenever I met up with him, he had a very nice car, and you know, hey, and Lance Burton, let's just. So the other side of this thing, I remember one time when Lance signed, well, when he signed his $100 million deal, and I said, so what are you going to do with the money? And he said, I don't know, Stan, I have a nice house now. I drive the car I always wanted to drive as a kid, which is a Vette. You know, he says, yeah, I'm going to build a house for my parents. And it wasn't until years later that Lance built that mansion up on the thing, but heck. Probably could have paid cash by then.
Oh yeah, you know? No, absolutely. I mean, listen,
yeah. So
for whatever.
There's a different kind of a lifestyle. What I'm just going to say is, there's a different kind of a lifestyle. Lance kept a simpler lifestyle. I think he's a simpler guy. I think Steve, when you're dealing with investors, you're dealing with show business at a different level in the corporate boardroom or in people's wallets, and that show business costs a lot of money. And gosh, I got a tour of Trick. Before it opened,
yeah.
And the tour theater, and man, look at the chairs. What are the chairs? Oh, they came from Italy. They were something. And, I don't remember exactly what it was. But every little detail was as nice as it could possibly be, which is great if you're spending somebody else's money. I'm sitting at a teacher's desk, an old oak teacher's desk here that I spent $15 for 30 years ago, and the guy delivered it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Somebody once told me, yeah, impress me by what you put between the covers of your magazine, not by what your office looks like. And so there's all different ways of approaching this kind of business. I don't believe $54 million got sucked into the stage, though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, who knows? Who knows? I mean, we do know, and this is something that we reported when he first closed, that, you know, Steve, from people around that show, you know, the idea was always get a television show. You know, the show was a means to an end to get a television show, and the television show was going to be a means to an end to promote the show. And when you kind of light the candle at both ends and you expect one to save the other perpetually, you know.
Right, and the problems in that theater were not just Steve's show. There were no other shows that played for very long in that theater, and that was part of his plan, was his show would play once or twice a night, but there would be other shows all day long, which has David Sachs and other people have changed Las Vegas, the face of Las Vegas, of where a showroom is no longer just one showroom, unless it's a mega. You know, David Sachs's showrooms do four or five different shows in them. So Steve was after that, and it never clicked. The people that were in there that made it in there weren't in there very long.
Do you think that this will be different with Sachs?
Well, David Sachs has, a machine in place. Certainly, he's a major producer here at this level. And he's always made money. You know, David Sachs is not the guy that's going to give you all the flash.
Yes.
He's going to make money. He learned that from his mother, who produced his sister's show, mm-hmm. Melinda's show. His mother made money. So.
Well, yeah, I think he is certainly a let's just say, safer bet than Steve Weirich was at that same theater, whether or not Rick Thomas is the new magic act in there or not.
Well, I saw Rick's show down at the Sahara, and Rick is a good magician.
Yeah,
Rick doesn't screw tricks up. he's really a fine magician, and this audience really really liked him. And he's developed that sort of caustic kind of attitude with the kid on stage and stuff, and it's working really well for him right at the moment. And so will he put on a good show in that? Yes, word of mouth coming out the door will be strong on Rick Thomas. And that has not always been the case.
No, all right. And we will end, and I hate to end on this note, but we will end on something that I found fascinating in the aftermath of this Weirich story, which is it seems to me that people cannot wait to pile on this guy. I mean, this is obviously, I mean, with all the stuff that's coming out with the bankruptcy stuff and kind of a lot of it obviously flying in the face of what he had said publicly. He also said that, you know, the show was going to be wrapped up. But it seems like there is no pity for Steve Weirich, that people are just rushing to kind of throw dirt on his grave. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that's always the case, that there are just certain personalities that have been successful, and we all sort of shake our heads. How did that happen? You know, there are certain magicians that you see on David Letterman and you say, yeah, they deserve to be there. Then you'll see one or two that you say, how did they get on?
Yes.
You know,
whose names will remain nameless.
Well, just, I mean, anytime you do a week, there's probably going to be one that you say, I don't get it.
Yes. How did that? Let's say one theoretically on Monday.
Yeah. All right. And, and you live a lifestyle and I don't know. It's just fast Steve. You know, I like Steve, and we put him on the cover of the magazine because he had done 8 years here in Las Vegas. He kept a show running.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not exactly jumping to pile on. We will report what has been reported.
Yes.
It's always a delicate thing for us, especially, when the FBI raids David Copperfield's place. Even though, as we read between the lines, we go, some of this just doesn't make sense. But we're in a news. We have to report that. And yeah. So we report it officially. And with Steve, yeah, we're going to report it. And I don't think we know yet, you know, whether Steve was the good guy in this and got screwed over or whether he was the guy doing it.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those things where, especially in a business where a lot of money goes in and a lot of times things outside of the control of the show, like the economy or, you know, the directions of certain, you know, management for the hotels and the casinos can change at a whim. And a lot of people can, you know, just kind of be out of work or have their business model severely hurt. To kind of pile on somebody like Steve just seems, it's not surprising. It's just odd to me that,
Well, you're a little more attuned. I haven't seen too much of the piling on yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is more, I mean, of stuff that I've heard, you know, off the record, as well as, you know, David Sachs has made a few, you know, comments about, you know, when somebody mentions Steve Weirich, he says, you know, I think I'm going to throw up in my mouth, or, you know, one of the Richard Abowitz, the gold-plated door blogger, not only had a really, really, really nasty post about Weirich, but also quoted Sachs as offering him a job, you know, as a ticket taker at his old theater and everything. And it's like,
see, this is why people read, this is why people come to iTrix.
Well, hey, we just linked to it. It's fascinating to me. It's so crazy that, you know, and
he
wasn't a super like guy. And I get that. And I know if let's say Believe closed tomorrow, there would certainly be, you know, an explosion of schadenfreude from many sectors of the magic world. And I get that because Chris is a guy who's on television, who has, you know, for whatever his personality personally is, I think there's plenty of stuff out there to suggest that maybe a lot of people don't like him because of his personality. But I can understand people piling on Chris Angel. I don't know. Weirich just seems like, I'm the kind of guy where I can get people not liking him, but it seems odd that nobody's like, wow, you know, I bet you if I lost $54 million and I had to file for bankruptcy, I would feel really, really, really bad about myself. And I don't know, you know, if I would want to be the guy pointing and laughing, but I don't know.
No, and I think, weird. You know, I do think, will we ever know the whole story on that? I don't know. No. But there are certainly people digging into it. And the other part of this is that $54 million throws it into a realm of where you just don't bury it. You know, yeah. If he's pulled some shenanigans, and I'm not saying he has because I'd have no way of knowing that. But if he has, they're going to come out. $54 million is enough for people to go get you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, it's so, certainly enough for the government to look into it, right?
Yeah, God, I hope so. They look into me close enough. I think they should look a lot closer to other people. In fact, I might just give him his name. What the hell? Here,
there
there's
we
name,
go.
Number.
There we go. Let's go ahead and just mail his bankruptcy filing to the IRS.
Oh, you guys, see, that's why you do what you do here. You're good.
All right, folks, that about wraps it up for this edition of the Magic Week in Review. I want to encourage everybody to not only purchase this month's edition of Magic Magazine featuring Kalen and Ginger on the cover, but also subscribe. Where can people do that, Stan?
Oh, you can't.
Oh, done away with it?
It's a top secret thing. If you weren't a subscriber before, I'm sorry. I'm trying a new ploy here.
Okay, all right. Make people work.
No. Of course, go to www.magicmagazine.com. And we even have a month-to-month subscription. How about that? You can try it out for a few months, and if you don't like it, I can't imagine that.
Oh, come on. Stop it.
No, how would that happen? Yeah. Yes. But anyway, sure. I appreciate it. Thank you, Justin.
Oh, no. And you guys, do you guys have... I mean, I know you have the email list out for people, for subscribers, right?
Sorry, I don't understand what you're saying.
You guys do an email update for subscribers?
Oh, we do. Yeah. We do. You can sign up for a preview, and that goes to just everybody who's on our list. And then if you are a subscriber to Magic Magazine and we read something really good on iTrix, and we e-blast that out to our subscribers. So I think we might have – I don't know. Did you have – did we break the – the David Letterman before you or not? We tried to. See, that's that competition thing.
You probably did have that. You probably had that before us. Yeah, because we didn't have that super early. We didn't know that was coming.
Yeah, so we sent that out to everybody that are subscribers to ours.
Yes.
Yeah, if you're a subscriber, then we will send you whatever we find out about television. And funny enough, that goes back to when I had a newsletter and we would send you a postcard.
Yes. Now, you guys are usually way better with TV stuff. You guys got your hooks into the TV stuff a lot better than we do.
We have a few contacts there. That's good.
Yes, certainly so. And wait, am I hallucinating or do you guys have a Twitter?
You'd be hallucinating on that.
All right, I'm hallucinating.
I don't even have a Facebook page. Well, I take it back. We do have a Facebook page.
Yes.
It's because of my daughter that we have a Facebook page.
I know. And your daughter's on Twitter. Yeah. Summer job for Katie, just make a Magic Magazine Twitter and just put some of the stories from the email list on the Twitter.
I can't hear you. I can't hear you.
Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. All right, folks. That about wraps it up for this edition of the Magic Week in Review. Until next week, I am Justin Robert Young. That is Justin R. Young on Twitter. Bang and go.
iTricks.com.